So I was sitting, my little girl goes to ballet and tap. She does dance, which I couldn't be the furthest thing from like a dance mom. But she loves it nonetheless, so there I am.
Do you only do it because she looks cute?
Well, she does look pretty cute, doesn't she?
She looks cute.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't be like, I'd rather her play like football or soccer because that's what I did. So that's what I know. But obviously you can't do that. So I'm sitting there today. We're recording on a Saturday, and I took her to dance earlier. And, like, all the moms in the room are just, like, chatting and, like, just about normal stuff. And then I kind of, like, have one of those moments when I realized what I was doing. And I was actually, like, on Wikipedia just going over a few things about a serial killer, like, research-wise.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I kind of look off and I'm like, oh my God, where did it all go wrong?
Like all the other moms are talking about going and getting like lattes afterwards and you're like, ooh, murder.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Hi everyone and welcome to Murder Friends, the podcast where three friends from three different countries talk about murder. My name's Alana and I'm Canadian.
Hi, I'm Anna and I'm American.
My name's Hannah and I'm British.
So sit back and relax, you're among friends, and let's talk murder.
Right, so we have all been on trips, been on holidays these last few weeks, haven't we?
We thought, what a great time to go on holiday.
Right,
and then,
when you...
And then launch a podcast while we're all away.
Oh, why not?
I thought that was... fantastic timing by us.
Let's make it harder than it has to be. You know what I mean? I mean, why not? I mean,
time differences.
Yeah. I feel like we pulled it off, though. I think it was all right. I think it went okay.
Yeah, it was fine.
But, okay, so let's hear some stories. So, Hannah, you went to Germany.
I went to Germany, which a lot of people were really, like... weird about when they were like, oh, where did you go on holiday? I was like, oh, I went to Germany. And they look at you like, why would you go to Germany on holiday? Like, of all the places you could go, why did you go to Germany? And I'll tell you why. Because Germany is fucking brilliant. It's amazing. Honestly. It is so beautiful. We actually drove. So we drove down through England, got on the Channel Tunnel, which I like to call Le Channel. Drove down through France, stopped in Strasbourg, and then drove down into sort of like lower parts of Germany, like Bavaria. And it is so beautiful. It's just like unreal. Because I've never been skiing or anything like that. I'm not fancy. And it's just like, it's like the Bavarian Alps were gorgeous. And like they had these little tiny like little German towns. And the food was fantastic. And the people are so nice. But it was really great. I had a really good time. But fucking knackered. It's a lot of driving as well.
Yeah, that's a long way to go.
It's like a long way.
Yeah. Your pictures looked amazing, so we'll have to post some of those. It looked really good. And please tell me you drank loads of beer.
Yeah, because Germany have open container laws.
Oh.
And beer is actually classified as a food.
That's incredible.
That is why you go to Germany on holiday.
They're a million miles ahead of all of us.
They are living in the future. I'm loving it. But it was great because you could walk around. And we went on a walking tour in Munich. And it was a beer walking tour. So we met our guide and he pulled out like two bottles of beer from his backpack and he was like, here you go. And I was like, yes. Absolutely smashed. But no, it was really good fun. I loved it. I would definitely go back as well. Like, there's so much more to see.
It is really beautiful really there. Did. There's a lot of good hiking.
Stunning. So much hiking. We hiked through a gorge. It had this like raging river running through it, like the Partenack Gorge. And it was so pretty. So pretty.
Yeah, Germany is one of those countries, like, I only spent a couple days between, like, Munich and Berlin and a small town in between or whatever, but so pretty. And I don't think people talk enough about how great Germany is. Like,
I'm going to be their ambassador from now on.
it's wonderful.
That is good. I went a few years ago, and it was amazing. And I can't wait to go back, actually, and just, again, do some more hiking. It's really, it's really underrated. Or maybe we just didn't I guess people in the UK don't necessarily, unless you're really into sort of, like, the hiking and all the outdoor stuff like that, I think you find here, people are like, oh, you're going on a holiday. Well, you're going to go, obviously, lay by a beach at an, you know, all-inclusive resort for a week. Mm-hmm. Not like, oh, I'm going to do this cool road trip and hike and, do all that. So, it sounded great, though.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Would recommend.
Right, so Alana, you went to Canada.
Yeah, so following that beautiful holiday you had in Germany, I went to Ontario.
Hey, it's pretty.
I hadn't been back this time last year, basically, so it's been a year, so a lot of family stuff. I was there for about 10 days, and while it didn't seem that long, it also felt very long. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of stuff sort of jammed into a couple days. Yeah, just a bit overwhelming. I mean, it was sunny, thank God. I missed that Ontario sun, so I got some of that at least. Yeah, it's not a holiday in my mind because I'm just kind of doing the stuff that I used to do, if that makes sense. But it's nice.
Yeah, it's the same when I go home and visit too.
Yeah, it's you go to see your family and friends and get over the jet lag, and then once you've done that, then you come back, basically.
Do it again.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it was nice to see my parents. they're actually now in France. So basically, we hung out for the 10 days, and then I left, and then they turn around and left, and they're on, like, this, I'm sorry if you're listening, Mom, an old person cruise through France, which looks pretty fun. But yeah, Ontario.
That's amazing, though.
Yeah, I mean, Ontario's cool. It's got some neat stuff. You should definitely visit, but, you know, it was more of a staycation for me.
Did you go to Niagara Falls?
We did do Niagara Falls.
Oh, you got it.
The funny thing is, like, the falls themselves are really cool, but the sad part is Niagara Falls as a city sucks big time. I forgot, it's like the ugliest touristy trash hole of a city. I'm so sorry, Niagara Falls, if you're listening. Oh my goodness, I forgot how it's off. It's like everywhere you turn, there's like a Pizza Hut, and then there's like a Subway, and then there's these giant signs for laser tag, and come to this arcade and buy this giant ugly bear that you're going to have to carry around. I don't know. It's just, okay, if you're going to go to Ontario, go to Niagara Falls. Look at the falls for an hour, maybe. Go on the, they call it the horn blower now, but it used to be the Maid of the Mist, where you go on the boat below the falls. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. That takes 20 minutes. Maybe look at the falls for another 20 minutes. And then leave. I feel so bad. But, like, there were so many people, and we, I hardly heard anyone speak English. People traveled to come here, right? And I just felt bad, because it's like, God, you came all the way from Hong Kong to Niagara Falls, and it sucks. But now you're here, I guess, so I hope you enjoy your trip.
I know what you mean. If you get that with, like, huge tourist attractions, it inevitably becomes really commercialized, unfortunately. But I remember I went to the Niagara Falls when I was, like, 12. And I remember those ponchos you wear on the boat, and then you go on the boat and get, like, you know.
And that's great, especially if you've got kids. Like, it's really cool. The falls themselves are really neat. You look at them one time, you go on the boat one time, and then pretty much leave. So if you're planning a trip to Niagara Falls, please do not give yourself 2 weeks like some of the people that were there had done. Just, you know, a little stopover on your wonderful trip through Ontario.
So we went Christmas a couple of years ago, and when we went, it was freezing cold, and everything was covered in ice because it, like, throws up like an ice spray. It was really beautiful.
Oh, I bet that's amazing.
Oh, it was gorgeous, but the boat wasn't running.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, shit. And then we went to, like, Niagara-on-the-Lake.
Niagara-on-the-Lake is beautiful. All the wineries gorgeous, and the vineyards and stuff.
Yeah. There was, like, a brilliant fudge shop. Ugh. Yes. But no, yeah, you're right. It is pretty tacky. Yeah. No offense.
It's great. Great for a stopover.
Yeah.
Have a little peek and then carry on.
Beautiful.
But I know, Anna, you also went on holiday.
Well, we just did, like, a tiny thing. We just went to Devon, which is in the southwest England, which is actually really pretty, lots of stuff there. But actually, we only went for a long weekend with, like, little family trip, the little one, to see some other family over there. But then the next weekend, we went to Brighton, and I surprised my other half with tickets to see a band, and they're, like, ska reggae, so ska reggae is the same, but the ska in America, like, if you're American listening, is a bit different, and it has, like, quite a different following. Like, it's still, I would say, you'll still get young people continuing to, like, listen to ska and reggae and stuff at home. But, like, here in the UK, which is Will's sort of, like, favorite sort of music, but to be honest, most of the people that listen to that style of music are older.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, 50. I mean, so we go to the band, and they're brilliant, and they're really good. It was good. They're really good. But the average age was, like, 55.
Just a bit of an older crowd.
Yeah, so it was at this, like, cool venue in Brighton, and it was in, like, the basement bit, which was, like, 9 billion degrees. Do you ever been somewhere where it's a lot of people, and it's so hot that you feel like you're going to suffocate? It was like that.
Yeah, especially underground.
Oh, God, yeah. So the line for the bar was so huge. And, I mean, you just had to stand there for, you know, for ages. I feel like they had, like, 2 bartenders for, like, everybody in this whole venue for this band, which was ridiculous. And then you kind of go out and there's, like, the toilets. And then there's this huge, big, open terrace, beautiful, like, bar, all this upstairs. And, like, I was thinking, oh, girl, I'll sneak up there. I'll go up there and, like, just get some fresh air or whatever. The guy's like, oh, no, this is close for a private party.
Ooh.
I was like, all right. And all he did was he put a sign up. So I was like, okay. So, you know, came back. And then I'd had a few drinks. So I was like, you know what? It's not like there's no, like, bouncer there. There's no one stopping me. I'm just going to go up there. I'm just going to see if I can just get a drink there rather than having to wait in that horrific line. So I was like, okay, I was feeling pretty confident and, like, went up the stairs. And it was quite a lot of younger people there. And it was like Cardi B was playing. Which I was like, yes, like, here we go. This is, like, more my style here.
These are my people.
These are my people. So I go and wait. There's, like, you know, at the bar, and I'm like, blend in. And I'm just going to ask for a drink. And I'm sitting there, and this guy comes over, and he's like, what I figured out was after overhearing it was actually, like, a American Express, like, had rented it out for, like, a big party for a lot of their workers. So I was like, oh, okay. So I stand in line, and the guy comes and says, oh, hey, how are you? You know, what department do you work in? And I was like, you know, at that moment when you're like, do I just go with this? Like, so I did. So it's just like, oh, IT. Obviously, you, which is even more absurd because you both know how terrible I am with technology. So where was I going to go with that? Like, what was I going to say? Like, because I'm so crap with it. So it's just like, yeah, I'm from IT. So, yeah, he's like, oh, really?
How bad would it be if he turned around and he was like, yeah, but I also work in IT and I've never seen you before?
I know. See that?
Oh, my God.
I know. But I went with it. He was nice. And I was like, yeah, okay. I'm like, and then I switched around. I was like, so what do you do? Tell me about which one are you, department are you in? I haven't seen you before.
Oh, my God.
He owns American Express.
I was just like, I'm going to own this. I'm going to try it. So, and then I got my drink, went back down. Okay, fine. So I came back up again later on, because I was like, okay, this worked last time, I'm you know, Anna from IT now, for American Express, so I'm just gonna work it. So I went back up this time, and this other girl who was quite drunk came up and was talking to me again, and she'd had quite a lot to drink, and in fact, I just saw her, like, twerking with some people, and, like, her bum was full on hanging out, and I'm thinking, oh, man, that sucks, that's gonna suck on Monday, like, you're gonna remember, you know. That.
But it's fine. And Anna from IT will not tell, like, shitty stories about what happened when you're drunk.
No.
Anna from IT is, like, the best colleague to get pissed with.
Exactly. So, yeah. So this is the funny thing is, so I'm talking to her, and then the same guy, like, I talked to before came over then and was like, oh, yeah, this is Anna from IT. And I think to her, and I was, anyway, I never said anything. I don't know that they believed me, but I went with it anyway. It was fine. Because then I didn't have to wait for, you know, 45 minutes for vodka and soda. So, anyway.
You lived your life as a spy for one night.
For one night, yeah. So, if anyone from American Express Brighton is listening, I don't work in IT.
And we also saw you twerking. Ha!
So today in true crime news, we are going to actually be talking about a serial killer from South Korea.
Ooh.
Yes. So I'm going to read this from the BBC, a BBC article that came out on the 19th of September, and it was just a small one sort of announcing that South Korean serial killer found after 30 years.
30 years.
So
I'm excited about this.
Now, what I'll do is I'm going to actually go back and sort of tell you about the Hwaesong serial murders. Now, I was actually practicing on my phone. You know where you can go and figure out how to pronounce stuff, and was practicing because I didn't want to, like, butcher this name.
Aw, that's so sweet.
So hopefully I've said it right. It's a series of 10 rapes and murders that occurred in the South Korean city of Hwaesong between 15th of September 1986 and April 3rd, 1991. In each case, a female body was found, bound, raped, and murdered. And they are actually the most infamous murders in South Korea in the modern history. And a lot of, they sort of compare it to, like, our Zodiac killer in the States. That's kind of what it is to them. So I am getting this information from Wikipedia now. Basically, they spent more than 2 million man hours looking for
Jesus.
This serial killer. Yes. The total number of suspects also grew to enormous numbers, eventually ending with a total count of 21,000 individuals that they were actively investigating. But the biggest thing is that South Korea actually has a statute of limitations on murder. So it actually doesn't matter. Yeah, their statute of limitations on murder.
On murder?
Yeah, 15 years.
What?
Yes.
Fucking hell.
Yes. So basically, they, yeah, 15 years. They have lifted it now, but up until the 2015, basically, if you'd made it 15 years, you were in the clear there. The statute for the killings had expired on the 2nd of April 2006. However, evidence and police records were still kept due to the significance of the case. When the statute is lifting to 25 years, so it's still 25 years now. But hang on a minute.
That's not really any better, though, is it?
No, it isn't. There shouldn't be one at all on murder. Like, that seems bonkers
to me. So is the idea that, like, you're smart enough to get away with murder for 15 years, we'll just let you go?
I don't know. It just seems like...
That's exactly what it says in the criminal code.
Yeah,
we'll just let you go.
We'll let you go.
We're just going to let you. Well done. Little pat on the back. You've done it for 15 years. You can off
Don't
you go.
Don't tell anyone else how you did it. It's fine.
Exactly. So on the 18th of September this year, police announced that the 56-year-old Lee Chun-jae had been identified as a suspect in the murders. He was identified after DNA from the underwear of one of the victims was matched with his, but he cannot be prosecuted because of the statute of limitations. But he's actually already in prison in Busan for the rape and murder of his sister-in-law in 1994.
Ugh. Ooh.
He is actually denying involvement in the serial murders. He was matched to three of the victims. I was trying to find in my notes which ones exactly. But he has one of them, there was like a copycat. So not necessarily all 10 are from him. And they actually can't even connect them to the other ones. But basically, I think the whole gist of it is this is what they found, the closest they found to, like, the actual serial killer.
Wow.
The thing is, as well, which I just thought was, I looked at the dates on all of the victims. So the first victim was 15th of September, 1986. Then the second one was the 20th of October. So that wasn't even a month later. Or that was just over a month later. The next one was the 12th of December, which was, you know, about 2 months after that. Then the 14th of December, 2 days later. Then the 10th of January, which is not even a month.
That's really terrifying.
Yeah, they're all like...
But it's just like happening really, really quickly.
Yeah, like 4 months. There were four.
Wow.
And then there were one on May 2nd, 1987, September 1988, September 7th, 1988, September 16th, 1988.
Jesus.
You wonder if September is, like, a significant, like, time period for...
But it's Virgo season, so, you know, gotta get busy.
There you go. Yeah, aren't quite a lot of the serial killers. Virgos. Hannah, who's also
I find
Virgo.
That offensive. I'm a Virgo. I find that offensive. But to be honest with you, yes, I get it. I also understand.
Anyway, I'm sure maybe more... I don't know. Obviously, he can't be prosecuted now, so there will be no trial, so we will not find out anymore, I'm gonna guess. But I did think it was worth sharing because it is, obviously, it's quite infamous. And it's not one I had ever even heard of. Had you guys?
No, I don't really. No. I mean, here in the UK and in North America, I think, on the whole, we don't really hear a lot about Asian murders or definitely not serial killers. That's not really a thing.
No.
No, we don't. I think the one I've really heard of, and it wasn't a serial killer. It was, and I think because maybe like Case File covered it. A couple of podcasts have covered it because it's absolutely horrific. And it was about a poor girl who was like basically tortured by a group of young boys. Have you heard of that one?
Is that the one where they like have firecrackers and they
yeah,
like,
the firecrackers stand out?
Yeah, I remember listening to that on, God, one of the Case Files or Sword and Scale or something. And I had to just turn it off, and I was like, I'm...
So did I.
That's enough for me, thanks. I can't even get through that one.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah, yeah, that was rough. But that's really, if I'm honest, that's probably one of the only other... they don't really feature them as much on, you know, like podcasts or shows or anything like that. I haven't heard that much about them.
No, but can you imagine, like, if that... Maybe if we assume serial killers aren't as common in Asian culture... And then to potentially solve this 30-year-old serial rapist murderer, like, that's huge.
Definitely.
I mean, I don't know anything about South Korean law, but, like, does the statute of limitations then apply to, like, a civil case? Could the family bring proceedings against him in a civil matter?
Oh, I'm not even sure how that would work. It's worth looking at. So, yeah, so that's the story of the Hwaesong serial murders, and they'd issue a statement from the provincial police agency that they expressed my deepest condolences to the victims and their families, as well as the Korean public, for not having been able to solve this case for a long time. But also, you kind of want them to be like, well, now I've got him, and he can't be prosecuted, which seems a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, that must be really painful for the
Exactly, that's what I mean. It's like, ugh, it's just awful.
Okay, so for today's true crime review stuff, I really, really want to talk about Mindhunter. I've wanted to talk about Mindhunter for so long, and I have nobody to talk to about it, so now you guys are stuck.
Yes.
It's okay, we also want to talk about it, so.
Yes.
You're in a safe place.
So for those of you guys who are not familiar, Mindhunter is a crime thriller TV show created by Joe Penhall, and it's actually based on the true crime book Mindhunter inside the FBI's elite serial crime unit, and it was written by John E. Douglas and Mark Olshaker. So it is interesting because it does have that true element, although some of the characters are created in a way to help tell the story, essentially. So there are some elements.
Dramatized.
Thank you. But they do talk a lot about true crime, real-life serial killers, what actually happened in some of these cases, which is so fascinating. So essentially, Mindhunter, both the first season and the second season, revolve around FBI agents Holden Ford, Bill Tench, and and Wendy Carr, who originate the FBI's Behavioral Science Unit at Quantico. So basically, they interview imprisoned serial killers to understand more how they think, how they thought before the crime, why they committed the crime, how they felt afterwards, with the idea that they could then apply this knowledge to solve ongoing cases. So season one is set right around the end of the 1970s into 1980. So it's like really early days of criminal psychology and criminal profiling. A lot of people either don't know about it, don't believe in it, they think it's dumb, whatever. So it's sort of setting the scene of how criminal investigation is going to change with this new idea. So the group begins interviewing people like Ed Kemper, who was played by Cameron Britton. And let me just say, Cameron, oh my God, he was so good. I watched this one clip on YouTube. They were showing Mindhunter's scene with Cameron Britton as Ed Kemper and the actual Ed Kemper side by side. And the way that he portrays Ed is so spot on. It's unbelievable.
It is perfect casting.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely perfect casting.
Goosebumps how good he was.
I would say the best thing about Mindhunter is that they, all of their castings and the portrayals of the serial killers have been unbelievable.
Yeah, it, like, it's, I didn't even realize that some of what Cameron Britton says in the scenes is word for word what Ed Kemper actually said and delivered in the same way, like the same sort of movement of his head or the way he holds his hands or if his legs were crossed a certain way. Like, it is spot on. It's so creepy.
Oh, shit. I didn't know
that. I didn't know that either.
That's crazy.
So throughout season one, which I think aired about 2 years ago, we get snippets of this unknown man, which is one of my favorite things about this whole series. Usually it's just at the very beginning of the episode. It might be a minute, it might be 30 seconds, and we don't know who he is or why he's important or why he's featured at all. The main characters never even reference him within the actual episodes. He's just kind of like this tying factor between all the episodes, and we don't know who he is, which I absolutely love in the show. Like, it's so clever. It's just fantastic. Now, when we transition into season two, which was just released, so for me personally, I watched season one when it first came out and freaked out about it, and then I rewatched season one just now and freaked out about it, and then rolled right into season two, which is set between 1980 and 1981, primarily focuses on the Atlanta murders, which is something that I actually didn't even know about at all. And I don't want to get too much into it because I really enjoyed the fact that I didn't know where it was going or how it was going to end. But, I mean, they are very famous murders, so you might already know. It just depends.
The Atlanta child murders, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Is that what did they refer to them as? Is it that, I think? It's very, recently, there was another podcast on it, wasn't it? Wasn't there?
Atlanta Monster,
wasn't Yeah, it? That's what it was. Yeah. I knew I'd, like, heard about it recently.
I think it was referred to as the Atlanta Murders because whilst the majority of the victims were children, there were also adults that they were trying to sort of, it was the same person, they think.
Yes.
Was that was it just the Atlanta Murders? Or was it the Atlanta child murders? I couldn't. I was just trying to know for myself. I couldn't remember what. I felt like I've heard them said both ways, but you're right. There was an adult victim, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I think, at least in the show, they primarily refer to it as the Atlanta murders. And of course,
gotcha.
Being in that time frame, they didn't know how it was going to play out or how big it was going to get or anything like we obviously do now. But quality wise, it is like a real David Fincher movie. The show is extremely high quality production. The seasons have color schemes, which I am a huge bitch for color schemes. The camera angles, I noticed, because I went down a rabbit hole and I was watching a lot of like different reviews and stuff on it. And they do this camera technique that I couldn't stop looking at, where if there's two people in a shot, staggered, so one in the foreground, one in the background, the camera would focus on the one that was important and then really subtly change focus onto the other one. And I didn't notice it at first until it was pointed out, and then I couldn't stop looking at it. It was so pretty. I love everything about this show. In terms of acting, I think it's fantastic. Like we mentioned briefly before, the casting is so perfect, especially with serial killers that are very well known. You really need somebody that's going to be realistic to that person because we know what they look like and how they talk and everything.
David Berkowitz, I thought, was another good one that they did this season, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that was creepy.
Yeah, it is really creepy. And they did Manson this season, but
I don't like anything Manson related. It's not cool.
No, me neither. So I was like, meh.
But with what I also like about the show, on the list of many things that I like about the show, is that the first season really focuses on Holden Ford, which is the younger FBI agent. He's the one that came up with this idea about interviewing serial killers, and it is kind of like he is the main protagonist, and we are introduced to other characters that are still quite big, but it is quite focused on Holden. Whereas in season two, it really focuses on the other guy, Bill Tench, who is played with a man with the best name, Holt McCallany. Holt. His first name is Holt.
That's
Holt
great.
Plays
what
Bill.
A good name.
I love it.
And I thought Bill Holt, Bill whatever, was fantastic. And he ends up being the main protagonist in season two, which I really liked that they gave the spotlight to a different character, and yet the show was still as in-depth and as wonderful as season one. I don't know any other shows that really change like that.
It was really good. Exactly. It was really good. I thought, because, you know, sometimes some shows you're like, well, we don't really need the personal storyline because it's such a, it's enough just having it. But they kind of have a good way of putting just a little bit of, like, you can almost see how the lives of the people who are doing this are affected, like this season with Holden and his panic attacks and the, I can't remember her name, Wendy, is it?
Yeah, Wendy.
Wendy Carr.
Wendy. Yeah. So she and her personal relationship and maybe how that's affected, and obviously massively how Bill's whole life is affected as well. They do a good job of not making it too much of that, of the fictionalized stuff, and, you know, it's kind of a good balance. I really think they do a good job of that.
Yeah, balance. That's a really good way of putting it. It's like you get the true crime and the really heavy stuff and the real life stuff, but you also get just enough of the ramifications of that kind of stuff in the personal life, and these characters become so in-depth. Like, they really, and I'm pretty sure these people are not real, like, not real people. They have created, like, Holden and Bill or whatever in some ways to tell the story. But it feels like everything is so, I just really like it a lot.
Because I know, yeah, in the incident with Bill's son in the show, where he's involved in the death of a child, he's not like actively, he's not the one that killed the child, but he was, you know, there and involved. And there's parts where someone else in the FBI is discussing, oh, you know, you can see all these traits of all these murderers that you're interviewing, you know, you can recognize them in children. And Bill's just sitting there going, oh god, oh god, oh yeah. God, this is like my real life, you know. It had like a, it added like a personal kind of not a personal touch, but like a real life touch to it.
Yeah. And
yeah,
I don't know for certain because I read it on the internet somewhere and I can't even remember where I read it. But I think that storyline actually happened to somebody within the FBI or within some sort of police force at this time, that the son was involved in that crime. So there's so many like little thingies just put that it feels so much more like a movie or maybe like an HBO TV show. Just fantastic. The only thing that bugs me is there is no word on future seasons. They haven't actually come out and said that there's going to be future seasons, although they definitely leave it open that it's possible.
I think because obviously the guy that we follow but don't really hear about, I'm going to assume that's a BTK. And so I'll be really interested. What I actually loved more about this season was we actually start to get to see them in action. So they're used. So the first season is a lot of more research and getting it off the ground. This season, they're starting to like learn and put it into practice and develop trying to profile and all that. So I actually can't wait until we even get to like season, hopefully, fingers crossed, 4 or 5, when they really start to like use it and walk us through how they've catched these infamous serial killers.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite shows in the last couple years. I wholeheartedly recommend it to people who haven't seen it yet, even if you're not a true crime buff. I don't know the word I want. If you're not super into true crime, it's still a fantastic like thriller drama TV show that you don't have to know background stuff about these serial killers. It's not like some inside joke between people who are really into true crime and the show. Like, anybody can watch it. It's just like super high quality and I love it.
So on a scale of 1 to 5, what do you
give? Oh my goodness, Atlanta? A 10.
Okay. Hannah.
I'd definitely give it a 5.
Yeah, I'm 5 too. It's kind of right up our alley, let's face it.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it, give it a shot. Start with season 1 by all, like absolutely start with season 1. It's on Netflix, and then you guys can tell us how fantastic it is.
So the second thing we wanted to review today is a podcast called 88 Days: The Jamie Closs Story. So I'll talk about the case and I'll talk about the podcast. But before I do, all my sources came from Wikipedia and NBC News and the Care 11 website. All these links will be on our website. But one thing I do want to note is that the Care 11 website is region locked. Which means if you click on one of the Care 11 links on a website from the UK, you won't be able to access it. You can do it, though, if you use a VPN. So that's just a warning. So are you ready?
I am ready.
Let's do this.
Because this is so brutal. It's not a fun one. So Barron, Wisconsin, on the 15th of October 2018... 21-year-old Jake Patterson shoots his way into a family home and murders James Kloss. He locates Denise Kloss in the bathroom, who is reassuring their 13-year-old daughter, Jamie. Denise attempts to make a 911 call at 12:53 a.m. He ties Jamie up, then kills Denise. He abducts Jamie to a cabin 70 miles away, located in Gordon, Wisconsin. They assume he is in and out of the family home, so this whole attack takes place in around 4 minutes. Which is terrifying.
Only 4 minutes.
4 minutes.
4 minutes to kill two people, tie up another, and then leave the scene is insane.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jamie's missing for 88 days before freeing herself and escaping from the cabin. I remember discussing this case with you both when we were playing around with the idea of doing a podcast. In fact, I think there's actually an early recording somewhere.
Yeah.
And I remember that we were all just really shocked at the ferocity and speed of the attack. Like the premeditation that's involved, and also how this absolute badass of a 13-year-old girl stuck two fingers up to her entire situation and saved herself.
Yeah,
honestly, it's an incredible story, and it's not a happy ending, but it's a much happier ending than
it could have been.
It could have been.
So the podcast itself is called 88 Days, the Jamie Kloss Story. It's produced by Care 11 and it's hosted by one of their star reporters, Lou Ragus, which is a fantastic name, isn't it? We've had just a great season, a great episode of fantastic names. He's actually on an episode of Forensic Files.
Is he?
In 2010 he's on it. So, I thought that was pretty cool. So his team covered this story from the very beginning and they had a really, really, quite close relationship with it all, which is quite an interesting kind of perspective. So over 8 episodes, Lou Ragus explains how Care 11 covered their story. They noted that after all the coverage of the story had concluded, they had a lot of material left which hadn't been released or used. And so the only logical thing they thought to do with it was to turn it into a podcast. So this is a direct quote from Lou Ragus. The Jamie Kloss case had a profound impact on me as I covered it for 88 days and beyond. It was unlike any other story I've ever worked on. Now I'm eager to share the twists and turns and the Barron's community message of hope in this format. And they do just that. They created a pretty good podcast. They had a really close connection with the family and the community, which gives you a closer look at the story. I know it's received a little bit of criticism where people are like, oh, you're exploiting this family. You're telling the story of a 13-year-old girl. But I don't get that it's that kind of aggressive journalism in any way. So as I said before, there was a lot of information in the podcast that wasn't available when this news story was developing. And one part that really, really stood out for me was Lou Ragus writing a letter to, and I put, the dickwad that ripped her family and community apart. Because I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's how we should refer to
him. Definitely. He wasn't expecting a response or anything, but he got one. And then he reads it on the podcast. Yeah. There's actually a YouTube video as well where he reads a letter and he actually shows it to the camera, which is, you can see he's childlike handwriting. It's horrible.
Oh,
they covered court hearings, victim impact statements, a lawyer for Jamie reads a statement written by her, and it all concludes with noting how, they're just trying to rebuild their lives, rebuild a community, rebuild a family, and how the family home then gets demolished. So all of this happens in less than a year.
Yeah, it's insane.
It happened in October last year. It's really strange for something so violent to happen and then for you then to have a conclusion
so quickly.
Less than a year later. Yeah.
It's really good because obviously this story was made big, huge news everywhere, even in the UK, all over the state. I mean, it was big news. And this is the first podcast, at least the first one that is just about this that was made, if I'm correct.
I think so, yeah. I haven't seen any other ones about about
it's certainly the one that has like the most connection to the case. The fact that this reporter journalist guy was actually in some sort of communication with the suspect, like no other podcast is gonna have that.
No, that was really good, and they were definitely the logical people to sort of put it together. I think the only thing you don't realize is that when you're watching news shows, and I'm gonna say this probably more so in America than you do get like on the BBC here, obviously they're only short segments, aren't they, on a news show, and they're usually quite animated, they're quite, you know, the question, this and that. It's not necessarily always just like these well thought out planned progression of questions in an interview. It's because it's all usually, I mean, this, a lot of this footage is like breaking news footage or footage that where they're just out in the field and they're interviewing people and children and this and that. But when you put it all together at once, it's, I found it like a little bit hard to listen to, because it just, it was like trying to listen to a whole podcast of breaking news and somebody talking about it in that, you know, it's not like it's a well thought out told story in that way. Am I making sense what I'm trying to?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I found that a little bit difficult because I think there was a lot of repetitiveness because of that in the story. Because it's cool that they were able to put together a lot of this footage and, you know, but I would say maybe that's like the thing I found. And some of it, I think also I would say, which as I was listening to this, I had to put notes into my phone because it was like, I couldn't. Like in one of the episodes, there's a guy that was on a TV show called The Voice. And there's obviously The Voice in the UK too. They dragged on and on for like 30 minutes about this guy on The Voice. And I think he like dedicated stuff, but it doesn't have anything to do with the story.
Yeah, he was like a local star,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, but I feel like they spent, it's fine to mention it, like, because that was kind of going on at the same time. Because like the town was excited that he was going to be a contestant on The Voice, and that's great, but they just went on and on. And one of the questions they asked when he did like a little, I think he did like a little, did he do a benefit sort of concert or something? Or he did,
yeah,
or he sang,
yeah,
or went to school. And I wrote this in my notes. The reporter says, in quotations, "Could you see the horrible pain in those children's faces?"
Oh.
And I just wrote, WTF. Like,
yeah, it almost felt like they were trying to drag it out into X amount of episodes. Like, maybe they pitched the show, we're going to do 8 episodes. We need to fill 8 episodes. Because they probably could have gotten away with cutting maybe 2 whole ones. Because I definitely skipped quite a bit where it felt like they were just rehashing the same thing over and over again. Or, like you were saying, about the Voice guy. Like, that would have been a great 5-minute bit or whatever.
Exactly.
I don't need more than that. That's fine.
Yeah, and there are 8 episodes, but there is absolutely zero consistency in episode length.
Exactly.
And I appreciate that can happen in, you know, investigative journalism and podcasts like this. But some were like 22 minutes long, and then other ones were 58 minutes long, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, who's editing this?
Like, you could have cut out, like Alana says, like, you could have cut out 2 episodes.
Yeah,
it's just
I think it could have been edited better. Like, the whole thing could have been put together a little. I'm not saying that as the story is obviously a very interesting story to listen to, but like what you're saying, there's no consistency. Like, it could have been edited a lot better, sort of thing.
Yeah, and talking about editing, there's one thing that fucked me right off, and it got to the point where I was listening, I got to like episode 3 and I was like, I hate this so much that I turned it off for a bit and then had to go back for it. So I actually grabbed some audio clips from the podcast itself, and I'll play one for you now. It's actually in 2 parts. I noticed that they were using advertising, obviously, and they at the beginning they were using adverts for their own network, for Care 11, and the tone of them just didn't really fit in with the mood of the podcast. Like, they're explaining these really horrific things. Like, they're in episode 3, which they call chapter 3, they're discussing what Jim and Denise Kloss were like, and then there's this really like semi-aggressive ad for like the Care 11 weather app, and it's just like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah,
like it's this.
Whose decision was this?
I know, it was a poor decision at that. And they also cut in at really weird times, so you could hear someone finishing a sentence, but they'd have like their last syllable cut off, and then the ad would go in there, and then at the end of the ad, you hear that last syllable.
Oh, it's like they slotted it right in.
Right in the wrong, and it was just like, if you, like a millisecond later, for that person to finish saying what they were saying, and then you could have put that advert in there, it would have been better. But I'll play a bit for you now, and then I'll play the second half of it, like after the ad's finishing, and you can kind of, you can hear it, and it drives me mad. So this is the first part.
Care of.
Hey, it's Josh Mankiewicz from Dateline. Do you need your true crime fix on the go?
So that was like the first, that was the first part. And this is the ad after it finishes. So you can actually hear like the of the end of her sentence come back in.
You know.
I think that you kind of touched on the puzzle that baffles me.
And it's like, oh my god. This is really shitty advertising. And that advert was for Dateline. But as I said previously, they were using the Care 11 ads, and they are horrific. They are just like Care 11 weather, and it's like, fuck off.
Jesus.
Like, yes. It's not the right time or the right place to either put in that ad or the tone of that ad. But other than that, I thought it was pretty good overall.
Yeah, I thought the podcast is held up by the story. No question. Mm. The story is insane.
Yes, there you go. Yeah.
The story is incredible. The fact that we have husband and wife killed, daughter kidnapped, daughter then saves herself, and from all accounts they talk about how she was really, really shy, like almost painfully shy, and the fact that this really timid girl then saved herself from a really horrific situation is insane. The story's insane. The podcast itself was good. The ad thing was really, really strange, and there's probably enough content that they could have cut 2 full episodes. But I mean, at the end of the day, I just ended up skipping through that stuff anyway, and it's still worth listening to.
Definitely. Anna, what did you think?
No. Yeah, no, I found it just irritating. I just found it hard to listen to. I think you're right. Okay, the story, there's a lot there, and there is some stuff like the letter from him. I don't know. Okay, I'm not gonna say no, but yeah, I would give it like a 3 out of 5. Maybe a 2.5, if I'm honest.
I'd probably say 3.2. Yeah, a good podcast, just not fantastic.
Yeah, I went for 3.5. I think that's one of the lowest ratings I think we've ever given, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, so far we've got like 1 episode.
Weird Crime Time.
Okay, today on Weird Crime Time, first of all, actually, ladies, let me ask you this. When you're going to go on a road trip, what do you usually bring?
Snacks. Snacks all the way.
Okay, same. Snacks. You might make a playlist. You might, you know.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Playlist and snacks. Yeah. That's a good show.
Playlist, snacks.
Yeah, I've got a playlist on my phone called Music James Will Hate.
Exactly.
And I play that on road trips. And guess what? He really fucking hates it.
Exactly. You nailed it. Nailed it. There you go. Okay, well, I'm going to take us to Oklahoma. I'm going to read you this headline, and it's from ABC News. Oklahoma man driving stolen vehicle caught with rattlesnake, uranium, whiskey, and firearm. So, obviously, there's no snacks.
You could eat probably one of them.
I mean, you could eat all of them if you're not a quitter.
Yeah. I like your attitude there. So let me just read you what's going on here. Officers in Oklahoma made a startling discovery after arresting 2 people at a traffic stop, only to find out that their vehicle contained a rattlesnake, a canister of uranium, an open bottle of whiskey, and a firearm. An officer with the Guthrie Police Department had pulled over Stephen Jennings and Rachel Rivera for driving with expired tags on the 26th of June. After the officer discovered that Jennings was driving with an expired license and Rivera was a convicted felon in possession of a firearm, both were placed under arrest. The vehicle, a Ford Explorer, was impounded because it did not have insurance. It was later discovered that the vehicle was actually stolen.
Oh my god.
Go hard or go home, though.
Yeah, wow. As the officers continued to search the vehicle, they spotted an open bottle of Kentucky Deluxe whiskey near a firearm. Because that's, I mean, I always drink my whiskey with my gun.
Oh, absolutely. It's Oklahoma. Obviously.
Yes. The sergeant said they then discovered a container of yellowish powder that was labeled uranium. Jennings, of Logan County, told officers that he had the uranium because he recently purchased a Geiger counter to test metals, and the chemical element came with the purchase. He joked with officers that he was trying to create a super snake. Gibbs added. Okay.
Fucking hell.
It did not appear that Jennings or Rivera were under the influence of alcohol, which is even more troubling. They were arrested on charges of possession of a stolen vehicle, transporting an open container of liquor, operating a vehicle with a suspended license, and failure to carry a security verification form.
not for carrying uranium.
Are you allowed to carry uranium? Is that a thing you can just have?
Yeah.
Is it?
You can buy it on Amazon.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, you're allowed, like, a certain amount of it, and it is, I know it sounds silly because you've just said it, but it is actually used for testing Geiger counters.
Okay.
But if you go on Amazon, have you read some of the reviews for the uranium they sell?
I've never looked up trying to buy uranium, never.
It's fucking hilarious. So there's one which says, I left this product next to my pet lizard. Unfortunately now, he's 350 feet tall and is currently destroying Tokyo.
I love it.
And another one, which is like, great product, poor packaging. I purchased this product 4.47 billion years ago, and when I opened it today, it was half empty. It's funny. Science jokes. Sorry.
Yeah, so essentially, I don't know. I feel like your trip to Germany was shit compared to this guy's.
I know. All I had was some fucking Haribo and Diet Coke.
Exactly. Well, what are we doing wrong in our life? Bullshit. So what do you think he was... So it's just, what a mix of... First of all,
items. Yeah.
What he's got a rattlesnake. Okay, he's got the. I mean, he's got an explanation for, you know, I guess the stuff. But, you know, what do you think they were ultimately up to?
It kind of reminds me of, I have tried to get better at this, but, you know, in my youth, if you opened my car, you would find a whole variety of things just in case. So maybe some things that rolled under the seats and I can no longer grab them, you know, throw some clothes in the back seat just in case. You got some snacks, you got some things, I'm not sure what they are anymore because they're too old. I feel like he might be in the same boat where your car just ends up becoming like a dumping ground for random garbage that you probably shouldn't have.
But you might need just in case. Is it like packing one of those grab bags for emergencies that the UK government are like, you should pack a grab bag, where it's got like first aid kit, torch, paracetamol.
Yeah, rattlesnake. Yeah.
Uranium.
Rattlesnake.
Uranium. Exactly. I mean, like, what is this guy doing with his life where that's what's just kind of tossed into his car? Like, you cannot be making good choices, man.
Live fast, die young.
So that brings me to the question for the listeners. What is the craziest thing you find in your car? Please tell us.
Oh, can I tell you the worst thing I found in my car?
Yes.
Okay, so I was doing some gardening and I cleared out my garden before we had it redone. And we took a load of stuff to the tip. We took like 4 loads of like garden waste to the tip because that's how much of a trash pile my garden was. We then put our car, like parked our car on the road. And then we have like off-road parking, but we had to park it on the road because we had a skip put in while the gardeners, the landscapers were doing their thing. And we didn't move our car for about 2.5 weeks because I'm not relinquishing an outside parking spot outside my house because like parking outside my house is horrific. Like it's so bad. Like you give up a spot and you'll have to park like 4 streets away and then walk back. And I was like, fine, I'm just not going to use the car. And then we went to use it when the landscapers had gone and I went to go park it at the back of the carport, and James opened the car and the whole thing was just fucking full of spiders. But we hadn't cleaned the car out properly.
And they've just been in
there. They'd just been in there like breeding and everything was covered in cobwebs. I like opened it up and it was like the inside of the car was like haunted. It was just everything was spiders. It was disgusting.
Oh my God.
It was so disgusting.
What did you do? Did you burn your car? Did you just set it alight right then and there?
I said that to James. I was like, just set it on fire. We'll just get a new one. Like, fuck that. No, we took it down to the car wash and they
do you deal
did
with
you pay
them
extra? Like, can you
they
deal
did,
with
they me? Did it. They did it inside and out, and I was like, I'm gonna tip you really heavily. for dealing with my spider invasion.
Oh,
I must have. There must have been something in the garden waste that had like an egg sack of spiders in it.
Oh my god! Oh, I just got like chills. Oh,
terrifying. I'm not scared of spiders, but like, it was just gross. And now, then we had to like sit in the car for this road trip, and I was just really worried that spiders were going to get like blown out the vents. Or something.
Oh no.
So that's the first thing I found in my car. If you think you can one up that.
Good luck.
Yes. Tell us your stories. So if you want to get in contact, you can email us at murderfriendspod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at murderfriendspod or Twitter at murderfriendspd. I think that's all we've got for today. We'll see you next time. Bye.